Okay, we're going to be Senate Finance to order. The time is 1:30, and it still is April 10th. So far with us is Co-Chairman Kelly, Vice Chair Fairclough, and Senator Hoffman. And I know Senator Dunning is Chairman of the Labor and Commerce Committee, which is meeting at this particular time. And Senator Bishop is ill, and I think Senator Olson is also at another committee. So they'll join us as soon as they can. So we'll continue, but we have a quorum here, so we will continue with the education public testimony. Again, we'd like to try to limit everyone to about 2 minutes, and we'll need to adjourn by close to 3 o'clock. And again, feel free to send us any comments, emails to the senate.finance.committee@alaskaledge.gov. And if you didn't get that, all the LIOs have that address as well. So with that, let's continue with the public testimony. We'll come back here to Juneau. David Stutzer, is it? Yep. David, if you could join us, please, and put your name on the record and your affiliation and proceed with testimony. Thanks.
All right. My name is David Stutzer. I'm here representing myself. I'm a general contractor, lives in Homer. I grew up in Alaska, graduated from high school from East Anchorage High. I have two daughters that have graduated from the Alaska Public School System. I've been working in the construction industry for about 40 years, last 21 years as a general contractor, and I'm here to testify on the vocational part of this bill, and particularly, I mean, in this bill, it's just the funding for the institution, so I have a couple of comments about those. I think vocational education is extremely important. It should be kind of a two-forked kind of an education system that we have, because I see a lot of kids from Homer High, and I read about kids throughout the state that are dropping out, and I think a lot of it is because their talents aren't being addressed in school, and a lot of those happen to be working with their hands instead of, you know, going on that college path. So speaking to that, I would like to see that some verbiage in this bill that would allow the institutions to be added to, so that we're not just locked into these. And maybe that's my misunderstanding. Maybe there's also already a vehicle for doing that. But if not, maybe have a statement in there saying, and you know, in the future, that there will be, depending on a certain set of standards, additional institutions that could be added to that. And I'm even thinking like a group of home builders, for example, Kenai Home Builders or the Anchorage Home Builders. They may want to put together, because my focus is residential construction, an apprenticeship program for home building. And certainly, you know, we have lots of industries in this state that we could train these kids so they would stay in school, give them credit for high school, give them credits for their vocational education, so they graduate with a diploma, they finish school, so they know about American government and U.S., you know, the history and reading and writing and the basic things they need to know, but they're also being able to start their vocational careers. The other thing, on that note, having that two-pronged tack, I really have a problem with the University of Alaska getting so much of this funding in this particular bill, because their focus is higher education, getting a diploma, and my thought is you want to get these kids into trades. So I would emphasize, for example, the AFTAC program, so they get more kids there. I mean, for me, that's a local, that's, you know, in Seward, so that's a local vocational school. Give them more funding. I understand they get quite a bit, but I think there's an imbalance in the percentages there. I think that the university system, they're going to higher education. I'm talking about getting trades, vocations, welding, you know, pipe fair, I mean, you name it. There's all kinds of stuff. And there's kids. I see kids in Homer. I get kids from school that don't do well in school that are great, great workers. So those are my two main thoughts here, is funding for the university, maybe drop that, and make sure that we can get more training institutions, facilities, organizations, so we get kids working in the trades that want to do that. Okay, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, David. Appreciate the testimony. Okay, and I want to welcome the Commissioner of Education, Commissioner Hanley, is with us as well again this afternoon. Thank you, sir. Ryan Stanley.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name's Ryan Stanley. I'm the president of the Academic Policy Committee at the Juneau Community Charter School. And I would like to talk a little bit about what we or our families are perceiving as an inequity in funding for schools of our size. So I'll tell you a little bit about the school. We started off quite small in just a couple grades, and over the years have grown. So now we have 110 students. We have what we call a whole child, whole school curriculum that's based on the constructivist philosophies of John Dewey, where at the same time that Maria Montessori was doing studies on how children learn. That's sort of the main teaching philosophy behind the school. We think it's pretty effective. We have about a $977,000 budget every year. $100,000 of that goes to pay a private corporation to lease our facility. We don't have a cafeteria or a gym or a playground, so there's a little bit of a barrier to access for families around town, but we do have good transportation thanks to a healthy relationship with our district. We're a public school, by the way. Lots of reliance on parent volunteers over the years, and never a dedicated on-site senior leadership position. The school is put together as a collaborative body and has relied on admin specialists to handle all the administrative stuff, including going and meeting with other principals from around the districts. I think it's a great program. We've met AYP nearly every year. We have gotten the governor's High Progress Award for growth. This last spring, the high school science fair, four students were selected to go compete nationally, and three of them were graduates of our school. The other was a graduate of the Montessori program here in town. So 110 students is under 150, so I'm specifically speaking to, in the Senate Bill 139, it's section 14. That section was removed from the House side. That essentially what happens is if you have less than 150 students in a charter school, you're calculated as if you had 400 students. So we've factored this to about a $200,000 budget inequity if you were to compare our school with a neighborhood school of the exact same size. So my family said, why are we getting $200,000 less than a neighborhood school? Go over there and find out. So that's why I'm here. We're in support of that Section 14 and Senate Bill 139, and we hope that it can stay in so that we can repair the funding for charter schools like ours.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Ryan.
Thanks.
Okay, let's see. Donna Helmer, and then we'll go to Tammy and Natasha. Welcome, Donna.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Donna Helmer. I'm the 2013 Alaska School Librarian of the Year, and I am the president-elect of the Alaska Association of School Librarians. I am, parenthetically, nervous as all get out. I know you're my friends, but I know. I'm still a little bit nervous. And so I'm requesting an accommodation. My family is Irish. As a result of that, when we get really passionate, we speak rather rapidly, and we begin to use our hands a lot. I am very passionate about education. And so if I get a little, put it down to being both nervous and Irish. Okay. When my grandfather came to this country as a 13-year-old boy, he came with approximately $10 in his pocket and a second-grade education. Not second-rate, second grade. Now, when I tell this to the students I work with, they go, oh, he must have been stupid. And I go, actually, he wasn't stupid, but his formal education ended at second grade. He could read, but kids, if he had missed 10 days of school in that 2 years, I don't know what letters of the alphabet he would not have been able to identify. Being in school is very important. The second thing is he could sign his name, vital to him, because that was the pathway to citizenship, and it also meant he could vote. He couldn't vote in his country of origin, voting was so very important to him. Being here today would have been such an experience for him to see the deliberative way you think about issues and you listen to testimony and you take all that in and then make a good decision for the children of the state of Alaska. I have to tell you, on his behalf, thank you. Now, passionate, yes, I am. I am a tenured librarian in the Anchorage School District. I do not have a job for life, although it's looking like it may be. I know that I do not have a job for life. I know that I do have due process. I'm not here to talk to you about the 10-year issue. I believe in the 3 years. I really do. But other people before me have spoken so eloquently about that and the fact that we need to keep it at 3 years so that it's kind of equitable across the state, really. We cannot recruit and retain people if it's not 3 years. I have to say that I am worried about my replacement, wherever he or she is coming from. We had 12 openings in the Anchorage School District for librarians last year. We couldn't find them in the state. We had to recruit outside. We could only find two to bring in. My children know me by name. They know that I am concerned about what they're reading, what they're learning, and so forth. I want to have a person there who's not just there for 1 year and maybe came for the Alaska experience and had to leave. That's the 10-year issue. What I want to talk to you about today is, because I'm a school librarian, Dr. Seuss, kind of my hero, please keep the star system, not the letter grade system. Think of those star Billy Sneetches when you think about this. Everybody wanted the stars, right? No one wants that D or F, and no child wants to go to a school with a D or F designation. And I'm not sure, in a world of choice, which we have, that those children won't be pulled out to go to some other school that's got a better rating, closing down the school that is in decline. Stars on theirs, please. Thank you. Questions?
I think Senator Kelly, aren't you Irish?
Well, she explained a lot.
See, now you know.
So when I do that, I'm not mad. Now I'm passionate.
Passionate and it's not anger, it's passion.
Yeah, now it makes sense. Now we understand all Senator Kelly. Thank you very much, Donnie.
It took me all these years to get to that.
Thank you very much, Donna. Okay, Tammy? Tam? Just Tam, not Tim.
She's going to be right after me.
Yep, got her.
Get on stage. So, good afternoon, Tam Agosti-Giesler, President of the Anchorage School Board. My testimony is going to be a little unconventional today because I'm going to tell you about a dream I had last night, and I'm not making this up. And I think this is precipitated by the fact that we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the earthquake, and I did indeed go through that in Turnagain. And after the earthquake, that area where the houses used to be that became the bluff and the beach, was we were allowed to play there, but with the stipulation from my mother, we would never go in the mud. So this was my dream. There's a teacher walking down the beach of the bluff and notices a student walking on the mud flats when there's no parent around. The student is yelling because they're stuck in the mud. It's like quicksand. They're yelling in another language, but it's obviously for help. The teacher is reluctant to walk out on the mud, but does it to save the student. With each step, the teacher swears the mud is reverberating a message back. With the first step, they hear inflation. With the second, they hear energy costs. With the third, they hear insurance. And then they step into a very deep hole, and it says healthcare costs. The teacher reaches the student about the same time that a crowd is gathering on the shore. The governor walks up and has a life ring with 85 feet of rope. He's also on the beach, walking close to the ASD CFO. The CFO says that there needs to be at least 400 feet of rope attached to the ring to reach the teacher and the student, and says that an additional 125 feet of rope are needed for a second and third rope, throw of the rope. House members show up on the beach, and they offer 210 feet of rope. Meanwhile, the teacher has gotten the student loose and is holding the student in his arms. And on the beach, many parents and community members have gathered. And they are starting to shout at the governor and the senators and the representatives to add feet to the rope so that it can reach the student. They're yelling 400, 125, and 125. The tide is coming in. The teacher decides to put the student on his shoulders to keep his head above water when the tide arrives. Everyone is looking at the legislators. The tide is coming in. And then I woke up. Natasha.
All right. Thank you, Tammy. Natasha, welcome.
I'll go ahead and tie myself here.
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay, so I'm Natasha von Imhoff. I'm the vice president of the Anchor School Board, and that was Tam Agosti Giesler, our president of our school board. We're here today to kind of provide a little bit of information to the Senate. In the last decade, the Anchor School District has utilized much of its BSA increases in support services for our students. And essentially the reason and the philosophy for that in the last decade is that it was very difficult oftentimes to separate social policy from education policy. So a lot of the BSA was spent on counselors, graduation coaches, career counselors, teachers' aides, etc. In the last 4 years, 3.5 years since the BSA has been flat, we have actually engaged in outside audits to look at our different departments for finding efficiencies, and we've cut between 10% to 20% in the support services. Teachers, aides, secretaries, assistants, you name it. Our head shed is actually about 25% vacant right now. So we are definitely consolidating resources and looking at for ways to be more efficient. What we're looking at is what are best practices around the United States. We're looking at the state of Massachusetts. What have they done? They are the top performers in the NAEP. They have rewrote their Common Core State Standards, similar to what our state has done in our district. They implemented a teacher evaluation system, similar to what the DED has implemented, and a school evaluation system, similar to our ASPE. In addition, what has Massachusetts done? They have targeted preschool. They have increased online iSchool course opportunities. They have after-school tutoring, during-the-day roving tutors. And those are the kind of things that I think ASD wants to look at. We are starting some of these on a small scale, and with increased funding, we would like to look at those at a much larger scale. So what we are asking for is a 3-year funding, if we could. That way we can put these programs in place and see them grow. With the Rasmussen Foundation, which is my other hat, it is 220. Thank you very much.
Oh, go ahead and finish your comment.
With the Rasmussen Foundation, we have seen that in order to get a project off the ground, it's minimum 3 years. So when we fund programs, that's what we look at as our horizon minimum. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Natasha. All right, let's go off net now. That concludes everyone here in Juneau that had signed up. So we'll go off net to...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just wanted to put on the record that I appreciate the Anchorage School District looking at Massachusetts. When I served on the subcommittee this summer with Senator Dunleavy and Senator Stevens, we brought Massachusetts up to talk about what they were doing. So we've been looking at them for, it'll be a year this summer. So it's a model certainly worth evaluating.
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, and Senator Kelly, who created the subcommittee, I apologize. Sir, I serve on a lot of committees with you.
All right, Arlene Jackson in Ketchikan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And it's a nice rainy day here in Ketchikan, as usual. I don't have a great story like a couple of the previous speakers, but I do have a plea. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on an important piece of legislation. We're speaking to House Bill 278. I am the tribal administrator for Ketchikan Indian Community, and I'm presenting this testimony on behalf of our president, Irene Dundas, who is unable to be here today, and she extends her apologies. KIC is a federally recognized tribe providing a broad range of services to more than 5,000 tribal members and to the broader community of Ketchikan. Because we are a hub center, people commute in from the surrounding smaller communities to access some of those services. KIC, we just finished a strategic planning, and we remain committed to establishing a Southern Southeast Alaska Technical Education Center as a means of delivering much-needed vocational and technical training to individuals residing in Southern Southeast communities. CTEC became fully operational in 2011. We offer industry-responsive vocational training courses for the Southeast communities. As I mentioned, we've been talking with people out in Prince of Wales. This has been identified as a need, and it's not only has it been an ongoing need, it's a growing need. Our first partnership was with the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District. We worked with the Rivera Blended School. Since then, we've developed many partners, most of those employers. We've also worked with, we have been supporting our efforts, and we also have worked with the university. The kind of state funding that can be made available through House Bill 278 will help us to develop the kinds of vocational training opportunities that our citizens need to become gainfully employed. So we were in one of the earlier versions of the bill, and we're now here to ask that we be re-included back in there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Arlene. Appreciate the testimony. Okay, we're going to go continue off net to Bob Griffin, Eagle River. Bob.
Hello, this is Bob Griffin. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can. Bob, please proceed.
Yeah, I'm Bob Griffin. I'm an education research volunteer from the Alaska Policy Forum, and I'm calling in support of amendments that the House wisely voted to add to House Bill 278 for the A through F grading system for two main reasons. One, it makes it very easy for parents to understand how their schools are doing. And two, it becomes a catalyst for improvement, as has been shown in about a dozen states that have already adopted the system. I've attended dozens of education conferences and summits workshops across the United States in the last several years, and AFRU through upgrading system is one of the most effective and certainly one of the most cost-effective reforms that I've ever encountered. Everyone gets it. The parents immediately understand the context in an A-through-F grading system. There's no need to give long explanations. The system's used in over a dozen states, as I've pointed out, and it was pioneered by Florida over a decade ago. While this policy was first instituted in Florida, there were more D&F schools than there were A&F schools, or A&B schools, but over the last decade, even though Florida has increased their standards five times, A&B schools outnumber D&F schools by a ratio of around 7-1 today. Florida has, the Florida communities have rallied around their schools that have needed improvement, and it's had a dramatic improvement. As we mentioned before, Massachusetts is an important model to look at, but I think Florida is probably even more important because it's the fastest improving state in the United States, even though that, according to the NEA stats, they're 48th in per capita spending on K-12 education. This year in NAEP testing, Florida was number one in fourth grade, low-income fourth grade reading, up from 26th in 2013. Since parents are the primary consumers of K-12 education, this provision that was wisely added by the House could be considered sort of the consumer reports of K-12 education. I see no valid reason that we shouldn't be honest with parents on the current state of their schools and give them the opportunity to rally around and improve their schools.
Does that conclude your comments, Bob?
That concludes my comments, and unless there's any questions.
Seeing none, thank you, Bob, for calling in today. And I want to welcome Senator Olson to the committee. Thank you for joining us. I know you have had another committee there. Appreciate you juggling. Michael Rayburg.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Rayburg. I'm the Vice Chair of the Academic Policy Committee for Winterberry Charter School. We're a public charter school in Anchorage. And I could talk a lot about the school, but really to save time,
suffice to say, the reason I value our school so much is that my two sons are thriving there. I'm thrilled to have this kind of educational choice in Anchorage School District as a public school. What I'd like to talk to you today is HB 278. There's a number of charter school provisions in there that I would wish to support. Among them, for instance, one is there's one provision that provides municipalities the option to decide that they want to forgive property taxes for facilities that house charter schools. That may seem like a strange thing, but the fact is that many charter schools contract with private landlords to have their schools. By giving the municipality the option to forgive this property tax, for instance, our school alone would save about $40,000 of state funds that are otherwise being consumed by tax. And that really brings me to the heart of the matter. When you're running a charter school, your main limit is your facility. Facilities are hard to come by, and once you've got them, you've really got to work hard to keep them. The way Winterbury keeps its facility is it pays 25% of its operating budget on facilities. We don't have a separate capital budget in order to run and operate the school. So every dollar we spend on facility is a dollar that we can't spend on instruction. The way charter schools survive is that we keep our numbers of students up because we have our funding is determined per student. So in my son's school's instance, we have about 28 children per class between first and eighth grade. That's a bit higher than average, but it's necessary to keep our facilities going. And what it gets us is a pretty basic facility, one classroom per grade, one faculty workroom, and a main office. So what I'd like to advocate, in addition to HB 278, is two things. First, a state per student facility funding arrangement directly to the charter schools so that we would be able to offset the about $400,000 we have to spend just to keep the facility and to keep the lights on. That would be one key provision that could help charter schools thrive. And the second is to ensure that because this body will often direct money to school districts such as feeding aid and other types of aid and are considering certain grants outside the BSA in this session in order to help fund schooling, please insert into the legislation that these types of fundings that are outside the BSA please be directed to charter schools as well as the districts that house them. That will help ensure consistency among different districts because it's not always consistent that when additional funding is provided outside BSA, it does not always reach the charter schools within school districts.
Okay, Michael, so, I got to ask you to conclude, please. Michael, your time is up.
Yep.
Thank you, though, very much. Okay, let's go now to Shauna Mall, also at the Winterbury Charter School. Shauna, go ahead.
Hi, for the record, my name is Shauna Mall. I'm the founding principal at Winterbury Charter School. I've been here for 9 years, and before that, I'm a graduate from the Anchorage School District and taught high school for the district for almost 8 years. Winterbury Charter School is a public school under the local school district. We have currently 235 students. We provide a Waldorf educational model, which integrates arts throughout our curriculum. We serve about 11% of our students who are receiving special education services. We have about 10% of our students who are receiving free lunch or qualifying for free lunch. When we began as a charter school, we found an office building downtown, and my husband and I paid the $4,000 for the facility to get a conditional use permit. We had a fantastic building there, but soon grew out of our space. We started with 20 students per class, and now we're up to 28 students per class. And I'm asking for you to consider putting this in within this bill, a per-pupil facility allowance outside of the USA to come directly to schools to provide offset for our funding of facilities. It's not just an Alaskan problem. It is a national problem as well, and it would really help us in serving children since at this point we only receive the BSA dollars. We primarily receive the BSA dollars with the exception of for three of the years that energy offsets have come, we've received those, but this would really go a long way. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for the testimony. Let's go to Linda Evans Fairbanks.
Hello, this is Linda Evans. Can you hear me?
Yep, sure can, Linda.
Okay. I'm Linda Evans. I'm speaking on behalf of the Effie Cochrane Early College Charter School in Fairbanks, Alaska. We're under the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I'm also speaking in support of Senate Bill 278. We do have 166 kids here, 7th grade through high school. We do have an early college program where our kids take college courses from the University of Alaska and also get high school credit. We have an FSA leadership program. We also have a trash as art program, a dog mushing program, hunter's education, science integrated with Alaska Native knowledge, and relevant curriculum that pertains to our students who live in the state of Alaska. I am supporting Senate Bill 278 and request that the legislature consider the pupil facility allowance to be used to help cover facility costs outside of the BSA, because it's when we have to pay for our facilities along with the money that we receive to run to teach our students, we're always coming up short. I'm also in support of language and statute clarifying and mandating pass-through monies to charter schools. We have only funds that we do receive are from the state, student-based allocation based on our enrollment. During our average enrollment during the count period, October count period. And I'm very thankful that we do have the opportunity to have charter schools such as Effie Cochrane Early College Charter School. We do serve a high at-risk population here in Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, and we're happy to do that. And I thank you for putting forth this bill, Senate Bill 278, in support of charter schools.
Great. Thank you very much, Linda. Okay. So now to Lisa Rieger. Lisa?
Hello. Hello, Chairman Meyer, members of the committee. Lisa Rieger speaking on behalf of Cook Inlet Tribal Council. Thank you for this opportunity today. As you've already heard today, programs all over the state have begun to really develop public-private partnerships to bring more opportunity to students in their region. And so we're speaking today in support of reinstating the increase in the residential stipend that has been removed from the bill. As you know, I think, at CITC, our public-private partnership has taken the form of Denina Academy, which is a project we do with the Anchorage School District. And we're able to do that because of our long history of working together with the Anchorage School District. And our students in the last academic year graduated at a rate of 91%, in contrast to the overall Alaska Native student rate of about 50%. And so we provide the year-round residential and essential support services to achieve success, and the ASD provides the academic program. So we really add our word in with the others who have supported the reinstating the increase to the residential stipend. And we also really support the changes to the charter school law, expansion of the educational tax credits, and the increase in the BSA. And I'm available for questions if you have.
Okay, Lisa, I don't see any questions. Thank you very much for the testimony today.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Okay, Jim Bates in Anchorage.
He's not on.
Okay. How about Cheryl Silcox?
Hi, this is Cheryl Silcox. in Anchorage, and I am a teacher at Winterbury Charter School. I've been a teacher for the state of Alaska for 21 years. For 16 of those years, I taught in villages outside of Nome in the bush. I taught in Golovin, where Senator Donnie Olson is from, and in Shishmaref, and in White Mountain. And those are highly achieving schools in our state that meet all types of special needs and encourage parent involvement, create community, and put children first. And so when I moved to Anchorage 5 years ago, I knew that I wanted to teach at a school that created strong community, and that is what I was able to find by looking for a job with a charter school. And I found a wonderful place to teach, the Winterbury Charter School, and I'm finding that all the charter schools here in Anchorage are very successful. They do a lot of work to help meet many special needs. They provide services that parents aren't able to find in regular public schools sometimes that they need for their students. These are parents and families that are sometimes needing to make special choices for their children. We find that we have a lot of dyslexic students at our school because their parents have really searched to find a school that supports the arts their gifted students are really good at. And we also encourage and increase parent involvement in schools, and which creates a really strong community. We also find that our parents really support the students, and they really support the teachers, and there's a lot of cooperation and creativity. Everybody's sort of like a very caring place to be. And when children are put first, that in a way that provides a good and a fair education for everyone, then everybody's going to come out ahead. So I really appreciate House Bill 278, and if we could make our charter schools, if we could help charter schools have a better chance at creating that fairness, then it would be good to have those facility cost that is factored into that, because so much of our budget goes toward our facilities. Just like out in the bush, there's so much money that needs to keep a school running. And if those monies could be put toward the children first versus so much of the money being having to come out of our own budgets to cover facilities, then there's going to be much more success.
Okay, Cheryl, well, I got to ask you to conclude. I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Okay, let's go to No Place Like Nome, Betsy Brennan. Betsy?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Meyer and the Senate Finance Committee members for this opportunity. My name is Betsy Brennan. I'm a parent of two students in Nome Public Schools, and I'm also on the Nome school board. I'll try to keep it short, or I am going to keep it short and just talk about the BSA. There's so many things to talk about in this. And I would like to strongly urge the committee to support an increase to the BSA for all public schools across our great state. For Nome Public School Board of Education, we just passed our FY15 budget this past Tuesday evening. And as a board, we want to protect our classrooms, support the best educational practices we can. And when we look through our budget, we're going to go into our reserve funds for over $300,000 to balance our budget and do just this, protect our classroom, support our teachers, yet we still have to make cuts to our staff. We also thank our city council. In the past, they've been very supportive, and in May, they will be, we approach them to ask for their generosity. So an increase in the BSA would go a long way to help us roll back some of these cuts and maintain our current programs that we're doing right now. So once again, please support an increase to the BSA and invest in the greatest resource Alaska has, our children. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for your time, Betsy. Okay, Megan in Anchorage. Megan Steinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for this chance to testify. We appreciate all your time this week. My name is Megan Stapleton Steinberg. I'm calling as a mom to three children, ages 6, 4, and 2. I'm also Irish, but you cannot see my hands swelling from this decision. I'm testifying for CSHB 278 and to encourage you to further strengthen it for charter schools. We appreciate the great discussion during this session with regard to helping charter schools. However, to date, there's no additional funding in the bill for existing charter schools. My eldest is a first grader at Aquarian Charter School in Anchorage. We applied to three schools as part of the Anchorage School District's lottery system, one charter, one optional, one immersion school. We got lucky because we eventually got into all three. In Aquarian's case, more than 800 children wait for that luck to play a role. The interesting thing is that when I applied, I had no idea charter schools are treated differently from all the other public schools, including the optional and alternative schools. When it comes to charter schools, local districts not only do not share all the federal, state, and local monies, local districts do not even tell you what monies you're missing. It is, as many would call it, the sin of omission. Charter schools operate with essentially the adjusted BSA, as you've heard, and that's it. So with just about half the per pupil dollars that every other public school receives, charter schools educate children and pay for rent, maintenance, utilities, and insurance out of that same academic budget. Mandating equitable access to all the intended dollars from all sources would truly help. A per pupil facilities allowance would also allow us to focus our program dollars on the classroom and our facility dollars on the building. In fact, Aquarian's fully depreciated and condemned ASC building costs us hundreds of thousands of dollars from our academic budget every year. Our building is in such a condition that it cannot be renovated. We need a new facility, and we've got no way to pay for it or to save for it. All the dollars should flow from federal, state, and local sources. If you can mandate the pass-through of dollars and provide a facility stipend, we can sustain our program and grow it so that more people are also lucky. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Great. Thank you, Megan. Okay. Is there anyone else online or off-net? LIOs? Okay. Anyone else here in Juneau who wanted to testify that maybe didn't get signed up? Okay. Seeing and hearing none, then we'll close public testimony. And what we're going to do now is tomorrow, I guess, yeah, tomorrow afternoon, is we're going to have invited testimony. We'll hear from the commissioner, folks from NEA, or AEA, whichever it is, I believe there's some other folks that have been invited as well. And we're going to go into more detail on some of the areas that we heard about today that are areas of interest and concern. Actually, let me take a brief at ease. I'm trying to wing it here, which is dangerous. Okay, we're back. What I'm told is tomorrow morning we're kind of behind on some bills. The session is running running to an end here quickly. So tomorrow morning we'll take up bills. We only meet for an hour tomorrow, 9 to 10, then floor session at 10. And then tomorrow afternoon we'll continue with the education discussion with the commissioner. Looks like Executive Director Bruce Johnson with Alaska School Council of School Administrators. And then Ron Furr again with the NEA Alaska. And then it looks like Association of Alaska School Boards will also speak to them. So, and again, we'll go into more detail on some of the areas of concern tomorrow afternoon. So today we still have a little bit of time. So I think we did have some bills scheduled for this afternoon. I think we can go ahead and do Senate Bill 197, which is Senator Olson's. Naturally occurring asbestos. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of public testimony on that, so I feel pretty safe taking that up. There is also Senate Bill 216. Are you ready for that? Okay. All right, we'll see how far we get here. Let's let the room clear out a little bit. Brief at ease. Okay, we're back. Senate Finance. We are now into the part of, we're going to begin hearing some bills. First one is Senate Bill 197. This is Senator Olson's bill. It's naturally occurring asbestos. Senator Olson, did you have any opening remarks, or do you want your trusty staff to introduce the bill to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of years ago, the governor, I sponsored and got through the legislature House Bill 258. The governor went and signed and put it into place, and which allows a system to be used for the use of gravel aggregate containing naturally occurring asbestos to be used for the building of state buildings, such as state building projects such as airports and schools. Otherwise, barges would have to be bringing in gravel that are non-asbestos laden. What happened, though, during this period of time was regulations were not finished by the Department of Transportation, and what this does is to provide a one-year extension for the from the deadline so the DOT could have, for the DOT to go and adopt and prescribe a method for bulk testing under the statute and develop and implement regulations related to that. So with that, I'll, if you're with your permission, I'd like my Chief of Staff, David Scott, to go ahead and present the details of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Scott, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, David Scott, Staff of Senator Olson. Senator Olson, I covered the intent behind 197 here, and so I'll just quickly go through the mechanics. Section 1 of the bill extends the authority of the underlying bill from December 31st, 2013 to December 31st, 2014. Section 2 provides that authority is retroactive from January 1st, 2014. So all of calendar year 2014, DOT will be authorized. And Section 3 is an immediate effective date. With that, Mr. Chairman, I could try to answer any other questions. We do have Mr. Roger Healy from DOT here to answer any specifics to the NOAA program that DOT is doing. He could also answer any other questions on why the regs haven't been completed yet.
Okay. Very good. So does the do we need to extend the extension on this? Is this, it's an extension bill. The dates work? Is this enough time? Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if we can have DOT to the table to ask them why there's been a delay, and you know, just to confirm that 1 year will provide them the date. Mr. Chairman, I believe both you and I worked with former Representative Jewell, along with Senator Olson at the time, to try to provide lower cost gravel and aggregate materials to people in rural Alaska who have been asking for years to reduce the cost so that they can have a little bit more for their dollar when it's spent in rural Alaska.
Okay. Sir, if you could put your name on the record and your affiliation, please.
Okay, members of the committee. My name is Roger Healy. I'm chief engineer with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I believe others have covered it well. In regards to the program itself, this is a unique program not only to the state but to the nation as well. We are in the process of issuing draft regulations. We have public meetings set up for the draft regulations have been published, and we're having public meetings next week in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Ambler, and we'll conclude that process and issue the regulations probably by mid-July. The time frame identified in the bill is sufficient for us.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, very good. Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Healy, do you anticipate 1 year is going to be long enough to go ahead and get these regulations taken care of so that they can be implemented so that some of the state-sponsored projects that are out there related to schools and airports can be complete?
Yes, certainly the time frame identified in the bill will allow for the completion of the regulations. What is also in place and has been in place is the interim guidelines, which we issued shortly after the original bill was identified or passed, and that allowed many of these projects to go forward and are ready for construction now.
One final question, Mr. Chairman. As we looked at the bill 258 that was there a number of years ago, put in by Representative Jewell, why weren't they done? Did we not give you enough time initially for getting these regulations promulgated?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, as I was saying, this is a unique program. It required a lot of coordination within state agencies themselves, and also hiring the position to get the regulations drafted and everything else took time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Senator Olson. Does appear like there's a Mr. Hafner online too from Fairbanks, if there's additional questions for him, also with DOT. And I want to welcome Senator Dunleavy, who's with us. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Any additional questions? Was there anyone who wanted to testify? No? Anyone here? Okay, we'll close public testimony. The fiscal note looks pretty self-explanatory. It's a part-time person with some travel. Okay. Any other questions? If not, then Senator Fairclough, can you make a motion for me? I know I'm catching off guard.
That's right. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill number 197-28-LS-1513-A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing, hearing none, that bill moves from committee. Thank you very much. Thank you for your flexibility. Okay. Let's take up Senate Bill 216. I believe that is. Okay, Senate Finance is back. The next bill before us is Senate Bill 216, and the title of the bill is an act relating to sexual abuse, sexual assault awareness, and prevention efforts in public schools and providing for an effective date. And this is Senate Rules, Senator McGuire's bill. She's not here, but her trusty staff is, so Amy, if you could put your name on the record, please, and proceed with introducing the bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amy Saltzman, and I am staff to Senator McGuire. Senate Bill 216, is also known as Aaron's Law, requires school districts to implement age-appropriate training and curriculum on sexual abuse and assault awareness and prevention for students kindergarten through 12th grade. This bill came to us as part of a national effort that's been spearheaded by Erin Marin. And she's a wonderful woman who actually was just up here a couple weeks ago and testified in the House Education Committee. And she gave a very powerful testimony, which I hope some of you were able to witness. Erin is an advocate and a sexual abuse survivor. She has made it her mission to enact this legislation in all 50 states. To date, versions of Erin's law have been enacted in 9 states. 25 states, including Alaska, have proposed versions of Erin's law, and they're all currently in progress. While Erin was visiting, she had the opportunity to meet with Governor Parnell, and he gave her his very strong support and just really appreciated her coming to Alaska and trying to spread this legislation across the country. Child abuse is a devastating epidemic that affects our most vulnerable Alaskans. Most victims suffer in silence, and they suffer with lifelong trauma and stigma. According to the statistics from the Office of Children's Services, which you have in your packets, there were more than 2,000 allegations of child sexual abuse in Alaska, with more than 1,800 individual victims, 40% of whom were Alaska Native children. National statistics estimate that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by their 18th birthday. The vast majority of these crimes are committed by somebody the child knows and trusts. There are currently 42 million survivors of sexual abuse in America alone, and 3 million of those survivors are children. And when Erin spoke in her testimony, she spoke about how she was educated in school on the dangers of smoking and of drugs. When we have earthquake drills here, but you know, these are real dangers that children face, and sometimes they just don't have a trusted adult that they can come to, and that's what this education would provide. Erin said in her statement, "Had someone taught me about safe touch, unsafe touch, safe secrets, and unsafe secrets, I would have known it was safe to tell. Instead, I lived my horror in silence, and I am now on a mission to give children across the country the voice that I never had."
Okay, very good. Thank you, Amy. Question, Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, we've been, as a body, in both houses working on these issues for many years, and I'm wondering if we need to have a person, and I believe she's housed, I'm not sure where she's housed. We hired an individual to take on this issue to deal directly with the Department of Education, a young woman, and we'd have to go to the Council on Domestic Violence. I can't remember if she's housed in education or in social services, but she was supposed to work with school districts to start bringing people together for training, and I'm wondering where that's at, because it was a position we placed, and she had been working with the governor in his Choose Respect campaign.
If I may, through the chair, Senator Fairclough, that is Patty Owen, and she's in the Department of Education. And I have Lori Morton here. She's been working with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And one addition that we made, I just wanted to mention, if I may, into the bill, this version of the bill, was we added the training could be in consultation with the department or the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And that's really going to be an asset for districts. We don't want to burden them with another thing when they've already been so overwhelmed. But when they can work with the council, that will really allow for some training opportunities and really be able to broaden their information base.
Go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, as some may know, I'm the former executive director of Standing Together Against Rape, and we actually, through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, have adopted training and the curriculum for a lot of this already in collaboration with the Anchorage School District. And so I just wonder the effect on other districts and the cost to those districts to implement that. And I'm glad that the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is going to participate in this, but I'm wondering if we need to directly link them with Standing Together Against Rape. At least when I was there, they had master's degrees in women's health in that organization, and they had made quite a bit of headway in producing those educational opportunities. I just don't want to reinvent the wheel when we already have something going, and it would be a cost to all districts if we mandate this at a state level. And so if we have something that we can stand up, I'd be interested in hearing from Patty Owens, who's supposed to be implementing that on our behalf already.
Go ahead, Amy.
through the chair, Senator Fairclough. I don't know if maybe it's I'm misunderstanding what her job title was. I didn't think she was in charge of implementing it into schools, but maybe offering it. I think that they've always been encouraged to have a curriculum, and almost all school districts do, as you said, and that's very true. I know the Anchorage School District has been working really diligently at this. And if they already do and they meet these requirements, they're very basic and broad, that's absolutely fine with the contents of the bill. The other piece of that is originally we had a task force as the original draft of this bill, because we wanted to align all the different resources like STAR and all the other trainings that have been offered. But when we spoke with the council, they mentioned that they have been working with a lot of work groups, they've worked with a lot of nonprofits, and they are really aware of all the resources that are out there that they can provide school districts with. So we were feeling confident in the fact that working with the council and offering that to districts would be enough, but I definitely understand your concern.
Go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, in my first 2 years in elected office, we had a task force, and this was one of the issues to provide training. And when we embarked as a group together with both bodies on investing in primary prevention, and we placed that $3 million in the office of the governor, that was part of the intent. And the only thing that that the body was able to secure in primary prevention was Patty Owens. So I'd like to hear an update from Patty as to, I'm sure that this is exactly what we need to do, but I just want to see what we're doing as far as, we've paid for a person to be doing this, not 24/7, but certainly 40 hours a week. And so I'm wondering if we can hear from Patty so that we make sure that we're on the right track, and that, because we've got a zero fiscal note, and I don't know that zero helps us.
Okay, we can see if Patty can. Are you Patty? Okay. Okay, would that suffice? Hold on just a second. No, I want to go through public testimony. Would that suffice, Senator Fairclough? For there's a lady here in the audience from
Department of Education.
Department of Education.
She's the director.
But it's not Patty. Do you want Patty?
Mr. Chairman, anyone's welcome to testify. Patty Owens is who we hired. If this person is works with Patty, then that's great.
Okay. Well, let's go through public testimony and then figure that out. I have a question, though, for you, Amy. In reviewing the comments in education that when this bill was up in that committee, there was a question asked if parents who are uncomfortable with this material being exposed to their children, if they could opt out, and the answer was yes. But then the concern was that sometimes it's the family themselves that are doing the abusing. So how do you deal with that, or how do we deal with that?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. It's a very difficult question to answer. I don't know if there's any easy one, and I would hate to have that implication. We did discuss that in the committee hearing, but I don't think that that's the case all the time of parents by any means when they choose to opt out their children that they're a perpetrator. I don't want that at all to be the understanding, but I do think that having some resources in the schools might be helpful for children who have something wrong at home. I mean, they will hear things from other students maybe, and maybe they will be able to get the help that they need if their parents choose to keep them home on those days. At least we'd have something out there, and other kids would know.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, thank you, Amy. Let's go on to testimony, and why don't we hear from Aaron? Aaron is in Chicago, and she is representing Aaron's Law, which is the bill, which is the name the bill has been given. Aaron, are you online? And if you are, I appreciate you being with us all the way from Chicago.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you, Aaron. Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Well, thanks for having me and giving me this opportunity. I was in Anchorage 2 weeks ago testifying on this bill in the House, and I can actually address some of the concerns that you guys have already brought up.
But first I want to say the law has been passed 4 years ago. I resigned from my full-time job in Chicago, master's level counseling position, to pursue this law on a national level. I passed it first in my home state of Illinois, and it currently has been passed in 12 states. Just this morning it passed on the Senate floor in South Carolina, and it's currently being voted on in 25 states, including Alaska. And as you heard, the whole point behind the bill is to educate and empower kids with a voice, give them the tools on personal body safety to speak up and tell. The same way we teach kids if you're being physically abused and bullied on the school bus or at recess, you tell a teacher, you tell your parents, you tell an adult to put the bullying to an end. Well, that's the same thing when it comes to sexual abuse. And I tell legislators the one thing I wasn't educated on was on how to speak up and tell. The only message I got as a kid was from my perpetrator as a little kindergartner at my first overnight, this man sexually abusing me and telling me this is our little secret, no one will believe you, I'll come get you, I know where you live. Well, we know with these perpetrators, they don't stop after one victim and they don't stop after one time. This man proceeded to abuse me from 6, 7, 8 years old, abused my best friend and another one of her friends, and we all were keeping it a secret because the only message we were getting was, you don't tell anybody, no one will believe you, the brainwashing, because nobody was giving us that message. But I was getting every year in school tornado drills, bus drills, fire drills, the 8 ways to say no to drugs through there, stranger danger. We drill throughout America in kids' heads, both parents and teachers, about stranger danger. 93% of the time, kids are abused by someone they know and trust. And half the time, we're pouring all these resources into these kids that are being abused because of all the behavior problems going on with them, the social, emotional problems. I was labeled behavior and emotionally disturbed. They had a one-on-one aide working with me because my behavior problems were so out of control. They held me back in first grade. All of that could have been resolved had someone been educating me on how to speak up and tell and not keep this a secret. My saving grace came at 8 and a half. I moved, got away from this perpetrator, only to get that much closer to the next perpetrator in my life. And no, it wasn't that stranger I was learning about. This time, a family member. From ages 11, 12, 13, this relative repeatedly sexually abused me, told me I would destroy our family, no one would believe me, I had no proof that he was doing this. So I kept it a secret. I finally broke my silence at 13. It wasn't because I was taught in school on how to speak up and tell and that I would be believed. It was because my sister was also a victim. My little sister came to me and said the same family member was abusing her. So I had made it my life mission to go out there and educate kids and give them the voice that I never had as a kid. And the reason it's been so successful in 12 states now and being heard in 25 more states is because, as I tell legislators in every state, all I'm asking for is an hour out of the school year to give kids a voice, and the fact that it could cost schools lots of money depending on the program and how they go about it, it can cost schools nothing if they use in-house resources, already paid salary positions, such as your school health teachers. I learned while I was in Alaska that Anchorage Schools, and that's with the superintendent, he told me that they have been doing this for 10 years in the schools in Anchorage. Their health teachers have been teaching it. Well, Anchorage School District is one district, but what about all the other districts in Alaska? That's why I'm hearing it's not being done and where it needs to be enforced and get into every school, because we want to make sure every kid gets that message. We don't want any kid to be left behind. And there's also school nurses, guidance counselors, and then here in several of the other states, we're training our teachers. A part of getting this message to the kids is also training, educating teachers. We all mandate teachers to be mandated reporters. That if a kid discloses that they're being abused, you by law have to report this. Well, it needs to go beyond that. They need to be trained on the warning signs to look for, how to properly respond when a kid is being abused. Because I can't tell you how many horror stories of teachers, social workers calling home where the perpetrator lives after a kid discloses, and that kid having to go home that night and be around that perpetrator, and of course recanting when the police finally get involved because they've been threatened once again. And the reason for the whole piece on
allowing parents to opt out. As educators, as you know, we cannot take away parents' parental rights. Yes, often the perpetrator is in the home. Is somebody the kids know, whether it's a father, stepfather, mother, sibling. Yeah, often you're in the home, but the case is if we can't take away parental rights, and often it's not both mom and dad abusing the kids. Yeah, there's cases, but often it's not both of them. So when this letter goes home, as it's been throughout the state of Illinois, going home and telling parents that your kid will be learning this week Aaron's Law, this is what Aaron's Law teaches, if you don't want your child participating, please sign this form. So instead of having them sign it to participate, because we all know how kids lose permission slips like crazy, they have to sign it if they don't want their kids to participate. Research shows that maybe in an entire school district, you may have one or two kids that do not participate. And it's not because dad's the one that's abusing the child. It's often because a very, very conservative parent that reads the language of this law the wrong way and thinks we're teaching their kids sex ed, which is not that at all. And because if a parent is abusing their child, well, a dad's not going to put a foot down and throw a fit about, no, I don't want kids learning this, because he's going to raise a red flag with the wife, the stepmom, whomever, of why? Why wouldn't you want, you know, our kids to learn this? So it's usually not, you know, if a parent opts out, it almost all the time doesn't have to do with the fact that a child is being abused, and that's why they're being opting out of not having their child participate in this. And most of the time, our research shows, is kids are getting the programs and parents are not opting them out. And it is showing already, this is the first year Aaron's Law has been taught throughout Illinois schools, and there have been numerous stories coming out of one school district, five kids disclosing that they were being abused. I had a police department 2 months ago call me and say, a girl had been repeatedly abused for 4 years by a family member, and she hadn't spoken up. And here she is now 12 years old and finally telling her story. And we asked her, why now? What finally gave you the courage to tell us? And she said, we learned Aaron's Law in school. I waited till after all my classmates left and told my teacher. Well, think of that one kid, had she never learned this, how much longer this abuse would have gone on. And all it took was someone coming, the school social worker coming into her class and teaching them for an hour on this, and that gave her, after 4 years of enduring this, the courage to find her voice and break her silence. So I tell legislators, this is common sense, that this is not going to cost schools, you know, a whole bunch of money, and it's not going to take up a whole bunch of time. It's well worth it to give kids that voice, and in the end, you end up saving money, because of all the money we end up pouring into these kids with the behavioral problems like I had as a kid, because nobody's getting to the root of what the real problem is, of why this kid is having all these behavior issues.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that you guys can see the importance behind this. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them, and with how other states are doing it. But I certainly hope that we can make Alaska maybe the 13th or 14th state to get this done.
Okay, Aaron, I do appreciate your testimony, and we have heard a lot about this law, and so I don't. In fact, some of the members heard it in another committee, so I don't see that we have any questions at this time. But I do appreciate you calling in from Chicago and telling us the importance of it, and we'll continue on.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay, I have one more person who wanted to testify, Jessica Lawmaster in Homer. Jessica.
Hi, yeah, for the record, this is Jessica Lawmaster. I'm the executive director of Haven House. It's a domestic violence sexual assault shelter in Homer, and we operate three child advocacy centers across the Kenai Peninsula. I'm a member of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and also serve as the chair of the Alaska Children's Alliance, which is the statewide network of child advocacy centers in Alaska. And also, I'm a mother of a toddler, and so today it's a rare opportunity where I get to testify while wearing all of these hats at the same time. So I'm testifying in support of SB 216, and in my experience working in child advocacy centers, I've personally forensically interviewed hundreds of child victims of sexual abuse, and it's their voices that compel me to express my deepest hope for the success of Aaron's Law. So So at the end of each forensic interview I conduct, I ask each child to identify safe adults in their life to whom they could report for their harm. Sadly, in my experience, some children are unable to name a single person. When children struggle to think of safe adults to talk to, you may assume it's because they don't have access to any. But let me be clear that when I say kids can't identify a safe person to talk to about sexual abuse, I'm referring to even kids who have very safe families and support networks, even kids with families like yours and mine. Children hesitate in identifying a safe person to tell because they don't know it's okay to talk to trusted adults about something so personal, so uncomfortable, or so confusing. They don't want to burden us, or they feel shame or blame and fear negative reactions from grown-ups who they want to please. So I believe Aaron's Law will reduce stigma around disclosing abuse, and it will assure children that it's okay to tell. And for decades, we've really expected children to simply say no to abuse as if they have the power or responsibility to prevent it on their own. We've sent a message to children that it's not only up to them to know it's inappropriate, but also just to say no and make it stop. But the reality is that children are incredibly vulnerable, and the dynamics of child sexual abuse are really complex. Children don't have the power to protect themselves from harmful adults. It's up to us. And sometimes child sexual abuse is hard for even us to talk about because it's painful or uncomfortable. But let us consider the message our silence sends to children. If we are not comfortable talking about it, how can we expect children to be comfortable telling us about it? It's the responsibility of adults, of leaders in the state, like all of you here today, to protect our most vulnerable citizens. As Amy talked about earlier, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. And we just have to make these odds better for our children, and I believe Aaron's Law is a significant step in that direction. Lastly, over the past 10 years and in the hundreds of stories of abuse I've heard directly from children, only confirms what research tells us, that 9 out of 10 perpetrators of child sexual abuse are known adults who are trusted by the victim. About a third of the time, sexual abuse is perpetrated by a trusted family member, and in some of these cases, that's the child's parent, their guardian, their step-parent, or the partner of their primary caregiver. It is presumed that these numbers we do know about sexual abuse perpetrated by parents and caregivers are underrepresented because it's these cases that involve the highest levels of secrecy and isolation. Parents and caregivers and perpetrators in the home who abuse their children strategically threaten, manipulate, and isolate their children to the extent where many of them never tell anyone until they are an adult, or some of them never tell anyone at all. So I believe this bill is important for all children from all types of families and backgrounds, and I'll be grateful if this education is available for my 2-year-old daughter by the time she reaches school. The more safe spaces for her, the better, and I want her to know that when I'm not there to protect her, there are others who will, and I also want her to know if she feels like she can't talk to me about something, there are other adults she can talk to. However, I believe this bill is the most important for the children who are out there today all over our state whose homes are not safe. So please consider these children, the ones who are isolated and bound by the chains of secrecy imposed on them by people they love and trust the most. I've heard from very young children who have grown up with sexual abuse so normalized they never realized it wasn't okay, and no one else ever told them so. So thanks for listening and giving me the opportunity to testify today, and thank you so much for considering this important bill.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jessica, for that testimony. Okay, was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And, you know, I think we're going to hold this to let Senator Fairclough and others who may have some additional questions to raise those tomorrow. Senator Fairclough, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, your staff had suggested that we adopt the committee substitute, so I'm wondering if we might want to do that for the record so that people have it available.
Okay. Yes, go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill number 216, Finance. That's 28-LS1617/Y, dated 4/10/2014, before the committee.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing, hearing none. Christine, you want to tell us the changes?
For the record, my name is Christine Mercy, and staff to Senator Kevin Meyer and the Senate Finance Committee. The version Y that you have before you, the only change is on the very last line of the bill, which changes the effective date. This coincides the effective date with the fiscal year.
Okay. Very good. Then if there's no objections. Okay. Briefies. back. We have adopted the CS for Senate Bill 216, and we're going to hold that aside for now as we make sure all the questions are answered adequately before we take further action on that bill. So we'll take up one more, and then we're going to conclude for today. It's House Bill 268, Big Bull Moose. And we do have this sponsor here. Senator Fairclough, did you have a question?
Mr. Co-Chair, I just was wondering if the CS was before us already. I think I missed a day, and I see we've got a CS. I just didn't know it was before
us. No, we haven't taken action on this yet, so it'd be nice. You want to make a motion to move the CS?
Certainly, Mr. Co-Chair.
Senator Fairclough.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease.
All right, we're back. Before us now is the Committee Substitute for House Bill 268, Finance. We have the sponsor with us, Representative Wilson. Representative Wilson, can you tell us what this bill is all about?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, Fairbanks North Pole. And in front of you today is the Big Bull Moose Derby, which would be managed by the Tano Valley Sportsmen Association and will operate much like other contests already allowed under statute. This will take place during the annual moose season by individuals that have acquired all the proper documentation already implemented by the state of Alaska to stay within the legal boundaries of the moose season. Participants must purchase a derby ticket prior to the open day of the season. Prizes are awarded based on the size or spread of the moose antlers. Anyone who enters a bull would, regardless of the antler spread, be entered into a drawing for prizes. The Tano Valley Sportsman Association is a nonprofit organization that hosts training and competition for the nationally ranked University of Alaska Nanook Rifle Team, as well as the local high schools. It is home to a multitude of community and school events, NCAA tournaments, biathlon training and competition, gun safety and personal protection classes are among the many. House Bill 268 would allow the raising of funds to further the use of the Tano Valley Sportsman Association, which a few years ago had a major fire and lost pretty much everything they had, and they've been rebuilding since then, and support the efforts of the nationally ranked UAF Nanook's rifle team, who has produced Olympic-level competitors. And as you may know, Mr. Chairman, with some bills, sometimes it picks up a little sister, and this one did. It picked up the Snowtown Ice Classic, which will be operated and administered by the Advocates for Victims of Violence. Participants must purchase a ticket and guess the total of snow accumulation in the town. Winners are determined by the closest guess of what the total snow accumulation. What they will be able to do, too, is that they had a playground they wanted to do for their children, and this will give them another way to be able to raise money. The City of Valdez Parks and Recreation is going to help do this. They will be taking in no funds. They will pass all of it to this wonderful organization. So with that, that's what the bill is, and I appreciate you hearing it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wilson. Questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is anybody opposing the bill?
Senator Olson, through the chair. Yes, there is one individual that has opposed it. And
what's the grounds for the opposition?
Senator Olson, through the chair, during resources, his opposition was that we would be bringing a lot of out-of-state hunters in for this contest, and that is not what this contest is about. It's about just taking advantage, like with the salmon derbies, people already hunting and being able to utilize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Wilson. It is past 3 o'clock, and we were going to conclude today at 3. So let's take public testimony on this tomorrow. I just wanted to give the sponsor an opportunity. She's been here waiting an opportunity to introduce the bill to us. So tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I want to do Senate bills first, of course, to get those over to the House side. So we'll take up Senate Bill 209. regulation of smoking. If 216, the bill we just heard, Aaron's Law, is ready, we'll take up that. And then we'll go back to the Big Bull Moose public testimony, as well as House Bill 32, which is the lines of business on business license. So that's the plan for tomorrow night. And then, as I mentioned in the afternoon, we'll go back to education to invited testimony. So, Representative Wilson, thank you much. Senator Hoffman?
Mr. Chairman, what is the schedule for the weekend, if any?
We'll be meeting Saturday. Saturday morning we'll, at 10 o'clock.
And what's the agenda, do you know?
We'll be hearing bills because we'll have floor session at 1 o'clock. So the intent would be to move some critical bills.
Critical bills.
Okay. Critical bills so they can be right across Saturday at 1 o'clock. And then we'll see about maybe after floor session if we need to continue to meet. Okay. Clear as mud? All right. With that, we're adjourned.